done sensibly is that the incentives that for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I should say the Allstate Skyline Studio. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. Frank Sennett will be along a little bit later in the program. One of the things I want to talk to Frank about is this revised plan for the Lincoln Yards. Have you been following that? Big, big developments coming to the north branch of the Chicago River, just north of downtown. They're still fighting for some community approval, and because of that, the Lincoln Yards buildings got a little shorter this week. We'll kick that around with Frank from Crane Chicago Business a bit later in the program. Also, they are losing a sort of an icon, a pizza joint in Logan Square. Seamus Toomey from Block Club Chicago will be here to talk about the changing economics of Chicago's neighborhoods. But right now we say hello to Terry Savage, a personal finance expert, joins us every Wednesday. You can read her, really around the country, watch her on TV just about everywhere at terrysavage.com. But she saves her best for the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we're all very grateful to her for that.
Always love to be here in studio with you, especially on a day when the Dow is up 435 points as we speak.
So Jerome Powell is sort of like Goldilocks, right? Or not quite like Goldilocks. He said the economy, the interest rates were just a little below neutral.
Jerome Powell, Fed chairman, actually speaking at a luncheon in New York, Economic Club luncheon in New York, said that, you know, that interest rates are just about right, maybe just a little below where they should be. Didn't quite say it that way, but I'm paraphrasing. And if you go back to early October, which is what scared the market, Jerome Powell, in early October, remember, we were coming off this summer of great economic growth and consumer confidence and consumer spending and the stock market rallying and glory days. And Jerome Powell came out in early October and said, you know, I think we're going to have to keep raising rates here. This economy is getting pretty strong. That's more what the market took it. And everybody started thinking, oh, they're going to raise rates again and again and again and again. Could be a full percentage point. The market tanked. And then in the weeks since then, we've had a lot of corporate executives saying, you know, it looked real hot during the summer, the economy. But hey, we're seeing signs of pullbacks. We're not going to spend, especially if rates are going up. The trade uncertainties are really beginning to impact our ability to make a profit because our costs are going up and we're not sure we can raise prices. And so a lot of economic uncertainty was uncovered in the last 2 months. And today, the market took Powell's statements as, yeah, we're pretty close to the end. And the stock soared and gold soared and interest rates are down. And
so, so does that mean then that Powell, has he remained consistent to his message, or did he sort of see all of this and blink a little bit himself?
I'm going to say, and I've seen a lot of Fed chairmen, that I think Jerome Powell is the coolest Fed chairman since Paul Volcker. That's really high praise for me, because I've had something to say about all of them. He was very measured. If I got to watch a little bit of it on TV, he was very measured in his approach. He talked about balancing the concerns over employment and inflation. He knows the dangers on the upside and the downside, and they are going to watch the data, economic data, very carefully. And he threw in something else, and we're going to be very concerned about the stability of the financial system. So he was very measured and calming, and I think that's part of the reason the market.
So he blinked a little bit.
Well, guess what's going to happen now? Now, maybe, have you just checked? Bennett, are you checking the Twitter feeds? I would bet that any minute the president is going to come out and say, ha, that good thing that Fed Chairman Powell listened to me and backed off his interest rate increases. He's doing what I told him. Well, I mean, I know the president's going to take credit.
CNBC's Jim Cramer's already saying that.
Oh, well, yeah, great.
You know, he said that Powell listened to him. Did you see there's a story in the Washington Post that Janet Yellen might still be Fed chairman if she was a little taller?
Oh, that was another. Please don't start with me. That was a Trump comment that said a
But it's
long
true.
Time ago.
I mean, the Washington Post is reporting, and given what we've been through, it's not
Can't
that surprising.
Can't you understand tongue-in-cheek?
You think that was tongue-in-cheek?
Yes.
You do?
I was talking with Janet Yellen just 2 weeks ago in Florida.
Uh-huh.
We are both devotees of a designer named Nina McLemore, and we bonded over the fact we
Me
were both
Me too.
Wearing
what a
those
coincidence.
Jackets. You don't know
yeah.
Nina McLemore.
No,
from
I do
Chico's.
Not.
But the fact is, Janet Yellen did a great job and got out while the getting was good. And Jerome Powell, who I've had the chance to meet on a couple of occasions, is a really strong, impressive guy. And I don't think he listened to the president's warnings or anything else. He made clear they're looking at the current data as it comes in and see the fact that the trade thing and a bunch of other political uncertainty are keeping
Speaking of fashion, I'm sure you notice I'm wearing a jacket from Chico's today.
You are wearing, what is that you're wearing?
It's
what
a sweater.
What is it? You look like Pat Boone. I haven't seen a sweater like that since, wait a minute, folks.
It's like,
do we have a camera here?
It's online. It's a cardigan sweater. It's a nice
Pat
sweater.
Pat Boone sweater, for those of
you're
you who remember those.
You're just sensitive because Chico's is in big trouble.
You know, I'm shocked. Chico's is leading the on the downside today.
They're down low 37%, I think, earlier.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, those of you who know that I only have two designers, one for Good Stuff, nine in McLemore, and I live in Chico's. And their sales were down. I can't figure that out. I have to get out there. We all have to get out there.
When was the last time you shopped at Chico's? Maybe it's
I shopped at the outlet on my way up to my house in Wisconsin a couple weeks ago. But they do a lot of business through there.
All right, Terry Savage here. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, you do your annual gifts for kids, and I love this. I think it's very...
This year's are spectacular.
But I want to do one quick second on General Motors' comment that their cuts were ahead of a looming downturn. I just want to know what you think of that.
Okay.
It's 12:21. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is in the studio. Okay, so I want to talk about gifts for kids and money-wise gifts for kids. But before that, General Motors, you know, people aren't buying cars the way they used to, so they have to change things. But one of the things when they announced their big reorganization was they were making preparations for the looming economic downturn. And that struck me is because if times are good now, I would imagine it's prudent to plan for the future. But I also feel like sometimes those things then build on themselves and create an economic downturn.
Well, I think Mary Barra is a really fascinating CEO, willing to speak out in the good times instead of being blindsided in the bad times. And
right.
I'll just say something, not necessarily that the entire economy has to go in the tank, but the auto industry is changing. There's a generation that could never imagine life without Sears and Montgomery Ward. But the whole world changed, and those two companies didn't keep up with it. Forget that for a second. I think what's happening, and I first heard my son say this in a speech he was giving to a group of financial people. He said, my daughters, that is my granddaughters, will probably never own a car.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked. I couldn't wait to be 16. My grandmother let me, you know, she bought a car and let me share it. It was my car. Because the American dream always was to own a car. You couldn't wait to be 16 to get your driver's license. Now with ride sharing, and with the fact that the cost of a car and the people are waking up to the fact that they don't need that car and they could get it for temporary use, there's going to be a big change in the way the car manufacturing business dominated.
So you don't think it's a sign of bad things to come generally
for the
economy?
No, I think it's a sign of things that are changing in the American economy.
Okay.
And we should be ready for that.
All right, let's do the gifts. So you just handed me a gift card for his Tesla stock. What was that about?
Okay, so today at terrysavage.com, my three favorite gifts for kids. Let me concentrate on, let me try and do them all. Stockpile.com.
We've talked about them before.
Yes, it's every year. You can give gift cards. You can start with as little as $5 and $5. There's 99-cent transaction fee. You can give little Jimmy a gift card that you can either print out or have emailed, or if you do it right now, go to stockpile.com in any amount up to $2,000. Here's a real gift card with a barcode that they will create, and it can have written on it what stock you might want to give, whether it's Nike or Tesla or McDonald's or whatever it is. But the child can choose something else. Over 1,000 stocks and ETFs are listed. It's complicated for me to explain to you. But the point is, go online to stockpile.com. Give $50, $200. They have a real account. Yes, the parents have to.
And they don't have to buy a full share. They can buy part of a share.
Oh, no, they're fractional shares.
Right,
so you're giving them $50 or $25 or $200.
But the idea is
then they have an account. And they need real money. It gets linked to your credit card or your bank account. But they can then track their portfolio and see.
And that's stockpile.com.
Stockpile.com.
Now, that's also tied into another one of your recommendations, the Busy Kid app, right?
There have been a couple of apps before, but I am so enthralled with this. This is my project with my grandchildren, if I can get my son to get it, buy into it.
You're the grandmother. You don't have to ask.
This is, because we need his bank account.
Oh.
Okay, Busy Kid is not just an app. First of all, go to busykid.com to read about it. It's not just an app that parents download, and the kids, by the way, download these apps too. It creates chores, it sets prices, it links to real money from mom or dad's checking account, and that real money can be saved or it can be spent. You can actually get cash out by sending the money back to mom, or you can build up, you can do all kinds of things with the money. And you can buy stocks because they have a deal with Stockpile. So if you get to the point where you've built up $5 or $10 and you want to buy $5 worth of Disney stock, they can do it right.
So it's kind of like an allowance tracker in a way.
It's allowance, right? And chores tracker, and you decide how many times a week. It's really easy to set up.
So the kids see $14. The money.
$14.95 a year for the whole family, as many kids as you want.
And the kids see the money coming in, and they see how it's distributed.
The kids see the money coming in, it's real money. The parents can see what's happening because it automatically gets moved from mom's checking account into this.
I'm telling you, there's nothing better than incentivizing, I don't like that word, kids to save or
to
create enthusiasm for saving.
Exactly. Yeah. To understand the connection between work and earning money. And then finally, moneysavvy.com, money, SAVVY.com, my favorite gift, you know, for younger children, the multi-chambered piggy bank, the plastic bank with clear lucite and different colors so you can give them to all the kids in the family. Spend, save, donate, and invest. And the OMG, oh my God, Teenager's Official Guide to Money. They've done it. She has a daughter, Susan Beecham, who founded this company years ago. And her daughter helped when she was a teenager write this book. And teens will actually like
it.
And
so that's a book for teenagers to teach them about savings.
Exactly. And money and very basics. The kind of stuff you'd like your teenage grandchildren to have. So that's at moneysavvy.com. The piggy bank and the books. Busykid.com teaches you about this app, and then you download it for your phone. And then stockpile.com, if you actually do this now, you have time to actually order the physical gift cards, or they will email them, or you can print it out.
It looks just like a restaurant gift card or anything like that.
It's cool.
All right, I'll put it up on my Facebook page as well, Terry.
Go to terrysavage.com and read the
top article. Nice to see you. Have a great week.
See you next week.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand in the Allstate Skyline studio, and I'm glad you're there wherever you are. I'm glad Frank Sennett is on the phone line from Crane Chicago Business, joins us on most Wednesdays. Frank, how was your Thanksgiving?
Very, very nice. I'm still eating the turkey.
Well, I hope it's been refrigerated or maybe even frozen, because it could be getting old by now, Frank.
Yeah, you thaw it out, you put some cranberries on it, all good.
Save some for the Big Ten championship game on Saturday. Bring out a feast for that. I know you must be excited about that.
I am. It should be a fun game.
Okay, so this Lincoln Yards project, you and I have talked about it. I've talked with other people about it. It could be really a transformative project for the north side. On either side, it looks like, of the Chicago River, along the Kennedy, not too far north. And so they were met with some community opposition, I think, that they wanted more green space or things like that. So the developers, Sterling Bay, sort of tweaked things and came out with another plan this week, right? So tell me about the changes and whether or not that'll be enough to win approval.
Yeah, so there are two significant changes after input from all the community groups. The developer is going to increase the open space significantly. They say that the open-air plazas and river walks running along the north branch of the Chicago River would now total almost 21 acres of publicly accessible open space, and that's up from 13.4 acres under the initial plan. And that doesn't include this big 20,000-seat soccer stadium that they're planning for the southern end of the development. So that's one of the two main changes. The other change is that they have cut down the projected height of the buildings. The buildings, some of them were, as high as 70 stories in the initial plan, and now the tallest tower under the new plan would be about 50 stories. So they've cut a total of 100 stories of buildings out of the plan overall, and increased open space by 56%. Those are the headlines, and they're hoping that Alderman Brian Hopkins in the second ward will give the green light based on, you know, this somewhat scaled back plan.
And so, you know, it's one of those things sometimes when you talk about it often enough or long enough that you forget that you don't actually know the particulars. So, but we're talking about either side of the Chicago River. I'm going to say roughly a little bit north of where the Morton Salt Warehouse is. Is that a pretty good location?
Yeah, I was going to say that's always my touchstone. I think of, you know, what everybody thinks of when they drive by on the Kennedy. It's that Morton Salt building area up north of that. And then if you're a music fan, the Hideout is part of that whole mix, and their groups are trying to make sure that remains.
Right.
It could be like the house in Up, you know, with all the buildings around it. There could be just a little bar left, but I'll still go there for music. But yeah, that's the area that we're talking about.
Well, and I think Hopkins had a meeting with the folks at the Hideout and residents there, because they're trying to slow things down. In fact, there was calls that they don't want movement on this entire project until there's a new mayor and a new city council.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know what the chances
are.
What are the chances?
I think the chances of that are probably zero.
Right.
But I thought that was a reasonable request. And Greg Kot wrote a really wonderful piece in the Chicago Tribune about the importance of the Hideout and how it relates to this development that people should check out.
Because Live Nation's coming in. That part of this deal is another concert venue, right, that would compete with folks like the Hideout.
Yeah, so it's, there are some questions in the arts and entertainment community. Do we need, you know, this many more venues programmed by Live Nation? And, there are some community groups opposed to that. And the developer says, hey, it's going to be great entertainment options for all.
But still, we talked about the Amazon H2Q or whatever and all of that. But this is something that's real. It's happening. It's on the books. And will transform that area. And it's not that it would create a second downtown by any means, but sort of like a satellite urban center, I would think, right? I mean, and it's going to happen.
It's almost like a suburb within a city, in a way.
Okay.
Kind of how I've been thinking about it. I mean, because you're right, it's like everything you would need to enjoy your life, cultural, shopping, you know, workspaces, open areas, it's all contained in that area. So the thought is, you know, this is kind of a zone. I think the South Loop, with all the development going on down there, they're kind of thinking about that in that way as well. You know, that we've got these kind of mini metropolises kind
right.
of on the books. Yeah.
I was in London with a group a few weeks ago, and we were on the Thames, and I'm sorry, I'm not going to remember the name of the neighborhood now, but it's like down beyond the Docklands. But you leave downtown London, you go around this bend, and there is really a second, it would be a major city in most countries that has sprung up, a separate sort of independent metropolitan area within London. And it seems to me that in some ways that's what would be the case here, although not quite as big.
Yeah, I agree.
Right.
I think that's a good model.
Talk, you know, you were the first one to introduce me to Talk, and it was a way for high-end restaurants to secure that people who made reservations showed up, right? They had to put some cash up. In 30 seconds
exactly.
or so, I see they've raised some more money, but they're spreading out now beyond just like places like Alinea, right, to where restaurants that not that you would go to, you go to those places, but maybe restaurants that a guy like me would go to.
Yeah, so Steve, you're brilliant. The thing I thought was most interesting about the story is that this is kind of going to disrupt maybe more of the restaurant business with that whole thing where you have to pony up some money and make sure you show up. And if they do it at the high-end restaurants, that's, you know, not such a big deal. But now they are inking deals with bigger restaurant groups like Burger and Lobster, an 18-restaurant chain in the U.K., and Nick Kokonis, the co-founder, says he expects a larger deal to be announced in January. So if they got to, you know, expand to more chain restaurants, it could really change the way we all reserve dining. And on the plus side, you know, maybe there's fewer overbooked tables and less of a wait. On the negative side, you do have to pony up some money right. up front. And so if you did, you know, if your babysitter didn't show up or, you know, what have you, you could be out some coin. But, yeah, a lot of these places, you make the reservation and, you know, save $25 up front. It'll be applied to your check, whatever that might be, or prepay for the whole thing. That's if that concept can go across the board for mid-tier restaurants, that disrupts the whole industry.
That's Frank Sennett. Read more at chicagobusiness.com. Hey, you know, Cyber Monday yesterday, was it yesterday, 2 days ago? One of the things I bought for myself was a subscription to Cranes, because you guys had such a great deal. So I finally ponied up the money, Frank. We lost Frank. Okay, well, that's because he was so shocked that I actually am paying for his work. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
start the timer because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Hey, look, another one. Another Amazon Go store, that is. Ogilvy Transportation Center is home to the latest cashierless store in Chicago, making it the third to open this year. The first two were widely expected to be test stores to see how the company would handle a rush of people during lunch and rush hours. But with this one inside one of the busiest transportation areas in the city, it will surely have to function at the best of its ability. And that looks like the strategy over at Monroe Capital, as they announced that they've raised $1.3 billion. What? Oh, okay, fine. Go ahead.
$1 billion.
Happy?
Yeah.
Anyway, the company is working with over 50 global investors to make up the fund that helps bring money to the middle market, which is a major part of the Midwest region. So West and East Coasters, you can take all your big hoity-toity investments elsewhere because we've got what we need and we're doing just fine. Unless you want to help make us better as a city, because then we can chat. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Seamus Toomey is in the studio. He's the editor-in-chief at Block Club Chicago. Seamus, welcome back. Nice to see you again.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay. And so give me the 30 seconds on Block Club so that people know who we're talking to.
Block Club Chicago is a neighborhood news site. We cover the stories big and small of all the neighborhood news around Chicago. We used to be known as DNA Info.
You guys still have DNA Info t-shirts you wear around, I think, right?
Until we get rid of all the coffee mugs right. And the backpacks, I'm going to keep saying it.
It's my favorite mug. I have a DNA Info mug at home. It is my favorite coffee mug.
It is sturdy. My mom said the same thing
There's
last
some
week.
Substance
These are
there.
Good mugs.
But, you know, that ended, and so you guys are giving it or moved on to Block Club Chicago.
Exactly. And we're doing the same sort of coverage that we were doing at DNA. It just we're a subscription site now, and we're a little bit smaller.
And people can find you at?
BlockClubChicago.org.
So Frank Sennett was just along here from Cranes, and we were talking about the Lincoln Yards project, you know, the transformative sort of development that looks like it's going to come along the Chicago River. The north side, near north side, is changing in several different ways. The Mayor Emanuel, man, I almost said daily. That'd be two mayors ago pretty soon. Mayor Emanuel was just at a ribbon cutting for this new Fulton Market area, which is a way like a return to the old Fulton Market area, or tell me about that.
Right, so the Fulton Market area, if you can picture it, it's just west of the Kennedy right downtown. Bunch of red brick buildings. It used to be basically the meatpacking district.
I always think of Randolph Street, but we're not really technically talking of Randolph Street here.
Fulton is just one block north of Randolph, so this is sort of Randolph's younger brother.
Okay.
It was the street that really hadn't been touched by restaurants and development quite the same way Randolph did in the 90s.
Okay.
But it sure has found it in the 2000s and beyond because it's nothing but apartments and condos going in there now and meat businesses and fish businesses moving out to the west.
They're all moving out to like along the Eisenhower, right? Exactly.
You know, the land has become so valuable. It's just, you know, they can cash out, move to Lawndale, and, you know, and start making their costs again.
So, but this development then is the way I read it, and I haven't read too much about it. It seems to still give a nod to the old Fulton Market days, right? Like they're going to be, it's not a food court, but a market, an open air market during the summer. What is that part?
That's right. There's going to be, you know, a farmer's market would be the easiest way of saying it, but it's an open air market. They're trying to bring some more pedestrian friendly living to all the people that are moving down there.
Right.
I mean, not that long ago, I used to work there in the 90s for my uncle's meat company.
Did you really?
Yeah. So I love this neighborhood because it's a real working neighborhood. I mean, if you don't watch out, you know, there was a forklift was going to take you out on Fulton.
Right.
And there was guys dumping bleach on the street to get rid of like the, you know, the chicken parts. So this wasn't that long ago while fancy people are walking by them and parking their BMWs.
So I take groups to Europe, you know, and I'm always impressed in Europe. We're just in London where you'd happen upon the street and it's just pedestrians. And I think of Mayor Byrne, actually. I'm like, oh, this is what she was trying to do in the 70s with the pedestrian street like State Street, where, you know, it was just people walking among the shops. Is that what Fulton's going to be like or not quite?
They're not going to go quite as far as Jane Bird did, where you know, it was basically just buses could go up and down state. They're still going to leave room for cars, and that was an important thing for the residents and the aldermen because it's become a busy street. They want to have people use the street one block north as well, which is really slow, but it's crowded now. It's not just forklifts. It's packed. So there's going to be wider sidewalks. There's going to be more planters. There's going to be concrete archways. There's going to be benches.
Hey, I mentioned earlier we're going to go to Logan Square. I misspoke. I should have said Uptown. But Mark Shipper's got this great story about Godfather's Famous Pizza, talking about the neighborhoods changing and things moving up, right? This is an institution there that shut its doors last week.
Yeah, this is Godfather's Famous Pizza. It's on Wilson. It's at 1265 West Wilson. It just closed a couple days ago, so I'm sorry I can't tell you to go get one right. One last slice there.
It was such a sweet story, though. I mean, this the woman who manages now, her father started it. She pointed to a spot in the restaurant where her mom was pregnant with her, and their water broke, so she was practically born in the place. They couldn't keep up with the rent.
They'd been there for 52 years, and they said their dad started it with money he made from his pizza delivery. They just said, Uptown's turning so fast that the same old story. You just can't mom and pop businesses can't keep up with it. So she had to shut it down, and they didn't sell it or move anywhere. They just
she's put everything. She was driving for Lyft to try to put money into the restaurant to keep it. It's closed, and they've got no equity, nothing to take with them.
It was a really sweet story that Mark Shipper wrote, because he sat in there for a day and he just watched people come. A father who brought his kids report cards because it earned him a free pizza, stuff like that, and people were just really sad. Because it was such a neighborhood institution.
All right, check that out. It's at blockclubchicago.org. Seamus, great to see you again.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.